This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Some time for a panel discussion on the topic of better public health for London and the big society.
Dame Powell.
Thank you very much. It come no surprise to you that I am going to talk about health and work. And I think if you think about all the changes that are certainly going on in this city and elsewhere, the health and well-being of our working age population is extremely important. So when I did my report for government, some of the things that stood in the way of that was the attitudes that we have, the sort of attitude that we have to be 100% fit to be at work. There are many people with chronic conditions, if they're supported, would like to be in the workplace. And there's a lot around that agenda of how employers do not respond appropriately to people with chronic conditions and disabilities, and indeed how often their diseases are recognised late. So it's a mixture of medicine and employer response. We then have a large number of people who sadly leave the workplace because we've got no early interventional system that enables us to deal with their problems. These are symptoms. They're symptoms of stress, anxiety, depression. They're symptoms of backache, neck pain, musculoskeletal aches and pains. They're symptoms. And when you talk to these people, as I did when I did my research for my report for government, what they told me was, well, yes, I've got some symptoms, but I really dislike my line manager. I'm really unhappy in my workplace. I'm in debt. My 14-year-old daughter's just got pregnant, and I really dislike life, and work is the last straw. And we have deeply medicalized this, and it doesn't help us actually get these people to be functioning human beings. I really see occupational health as a much broader topic than it is today. I also see it as public health in the workplace. So just a very few words there. We need to say change structures. I've changed the sick note to a fit note, and we're now piloting this early interventional service in 11 centres in the United Kingdom. So I'll stop there because we want to give everyone time to speak, but I'm about good work and good health.
And can I ask you one question, which is, what can be done to make it easier for employers or to encourage employers to employ people who do have chronic conditions, particularly if they're fluctuating? Because you can see why employers don't want someone who might not be able to, when they don't know whether they'll be able to turn up. Can we make it so that employers are incentivised somehow? Or?
Well, I think the first thing to say is often these people who do have fluctuating conditions, when they are in employment, are extremely loyal if they've got a job. So you don't see so much presenteeism necessarily in people who really are appreciated by that. So I think there is a real response in the way they work and the amount they work. I think that at the moment, changing your staff, getting new people in, putting in locums, there are lots of reasons why just keep changing staff is also not a good idea. We don't have any financial incentives at the moment to employers to do this, but there are schemes like Access to Work, which very few employers seem to use, that is a government scheme that would help you keep people with chronic and fluctuating conditions in work.
Thank you. Well, let's come along the table now. We start at this end. Next up is Nick Seddon, who's the Deputy Director of Reform. So public health and the big society, what do you make of that?
Thank you, Claudia. I'm just going to throw out a few ideas. The first is that I suppose I think that the adage, no decision about me without me, carries with it the correlative that actually of individual responsibility. And that the idea of the big society, at least, as is envisioned by the government, is about sort of robust individuals, as to the extent to which it's possible. And so I'm quite interested in what the incentives might be to change behaviours. We've heard a lot about government nudge, but I wonder whether or not there are sort of shoves that we can come up with in different places. And so I'm talking very specifically about, you know, what might we learn from insurance systems. Good insurers, for example, give credits for going to the gym or smoking cessation or reducing alcohol consumption. And could we be thinking about sort of parallel models or ideas? I was very interested to read this week that Windsor and Maidenhead Council has come up with a nectar scheme for community service. So if you fish a chopping trolley out of the canal, then you'll get some nectar points which you can redeem at Sainsbury's or something like that. I mean, is this an idea that we should be picking up with and running with, and at what level might people start doing that thinking? I know that Paul Corrigan, who is Tony Blair's special advisor and Milburn's before, has talked about customers or so the way that customers interact with banks being somehow translated across to the health system, so that there is this sort of level of co-production when the value that is created when people do their banking online is that you kind of reduce some of the you improve productivity in the system because you're making the customer part of the productivity the sort of the process. And so are there ways that we can translate that across into healthcare? The third level is I completely agree with Carol on the point of occupational health. I think there's a really, you know, if the big society is anything, it's not just about individuals, it's not just about charities, it's also about businesses and the private sector. And so how do companies do think, you know, whether there are, you know, could they have more gyms in place? Do they just have greater flexibility in terms of the pressure that they put their workforce under, or the incentives that they might put in place to help healthy behaviours? So I'm kind of interested in what levers we might be introducing.
Thank you very much. So we've got levers there. Next we have Professor Peter Copelman, who's the principal of St George's University of London and chair of the London Medicine Group and London High.
Thank you very much. The big society promotes empowerment and enablement, and Andrew Lansley has confirmed that the government cannot legislate for self-esteem. I'm a simple physician. I took big society, public health. I think the biggest challenge for public health at the present time is childhood obesity. And I'd like to remind government that Health of the Nation in 1992 set a target for reducing the prevalence of obesity, which was 13% in 1992, to 8% in 2002. The prevalence of obesity today is 25% of the adult population. And what is of great concern, Diabetes UK confirmed last week that there has been a 5% increase in the incidence of diabetes during the past year. And most of that is type 2 diabetes. So if we're looking at tackling obesity, what are the lessons we can learn from the past? Well, there was a review of Health of the Nation in 1997 when it was beginning to lose momentum. And what was raised about its failure was two major points. Firstly, the initiative was seen entirely as Department of Health rather than cross-government. And secondly, and importantly, Simon, at a local level, it was seen principally as a health service document and lacked local government ownership. What we need to do is learn the lessons from the past. I, unfortunately, I think, have been involved in every obesity initiative over the past two decades, from Health of the Nation through to Choosing Health through to Foresight, which was the Government Office of Science looking at predictions and projections of obesity, through to Healthy Weight, Healthy Lives to Change for Life. And what I find very depressing is that we aren't making the progress. We need to learn the lessons from other public health initiatives. I'm not saying it's easy to stop eating as it is to stop smoking. But if you go back to 1962, when the Royal College of Physicians published their seminal white paper, well, a paper on smoking and health, a lot of the issues they raised then are just as pertinent for food, such as promoting smoking to children, promoting unhealthy foods, such as the inability of health professionals to have skills to help people stop smoking, the inability of health professionals and within social services to help people manage their weight problems. So lots of parallels we should look at. And it would suggest that maybe there are local initiatives we must take forward and sustain, and there are central initiatives. It's going back to that nudge and shove. There needs to be some shoves as well as nudges. And I just want to remind people what Foresight said in their recommendations at the end of the report. They said there should be a focus on prevention of weight problems in children with emphasis on government's duty of care to minors, that there should be an emphasis looking at the promotion of healthier food choices, and that might well be subsidising healthy foods. It said building physical activity into our lives, creating incentives for better health, and the personalised advice and support to complement preventive care and treatment. And that goes back to a responsibilities at a local level in helping such people.
Well, since we're talking about local level, this is the perfect point now to bring in Jeff Alltimes. Is it Alltimes?
Yes.
It seems. So where does that come in then with public health and the big society?
Okay, thank you, Claudia. I'd like to say something slightly different from the sort of focus of the other panel members, which is to do with the urgency with which I think we've got to address the issues that we're talking about. So, yes, my background is local authority, currently local authority in PCT, but that's changing as part of the new changes in London. But the absolute crucial fact is that we are both local councils and NHS, extremely financially challenged right now. And so two-thirds of the council's controllable expenditure is money spent on adult social care. And the comprehensive spending review says I'm going to lose a third of the council's funding overall. And that is a phenomenal challenge. So my view is that we need to work with GPs on the changing the pathways of care in relation to long-term conditions. And we need to do that in a joined-up way, as we've been doing in Hammersmith and Fulham Council and PCT, joined-up way, providing a single service response to supporting people with those long-term conditions, and that is necessary in order to minimise the financial pressures of both hospital admissions and the sort of residential care that councils have to provide. And unless we address that with urgency, we won't have the luxury of some of the other things that we're talking about. And I believe that public health has an important part to play in enabling us to achieve that integration and to work out the right way to do it. Simon was referring to being in a GP surgery, possibly on one of the estates in my borough, big estate, where 50% of the working age population don't work, where there is an incredible over-representation of people with ill health conditions. So I believe that if we can get that working together on supporting people to live with those conditions, we can help those places that are the most challenged in terms of public health need. And I think that will then have a knock-on to some of the things my colleagues have been saying on the panel.
And we've heard a lot of people talk today about joined-up thinking and people working together. And, of course, in Hammersmith, you are actually doing that. How difficult has it been, though, really?
Well, the fact of the matter is that it's been sort of easy. And the reason it's been easy up to now, the government's policy changes have given us a bit of an extra challenge, but the reason it has worked well is because the staff in both the council services that were affected and the PCT services that were affected were up for trying to find a different way of doing that. So that we have now got single commissioning teams of staff working together across the NHS and the councils. And we did that by getting people to be part of saying that they were prepared to do it and without going for big structural change. And it's that commitment of staff in quite difficult circumstances, given the changes that everybody is facing, that have enabled us, I think, to make significant progress. The challenge is the next step, because we're going to do that at three borough level from now on.
So we've got a very wide range of approaches there with, talking to employers, looking at individuals, Nectar cards, childhood obesity, all these different things, and local government. So we've got some time now for people to ask their questions on any of these. Once again, we have roving microphones somewhere. There's one. And once again, now, can you stand up when you speak and say where you're from, please? That would be great. Who has a question or a comment is allowed to? If we don't, that's fine, because I have many. I wanted to ask Nick Seddon. Yours is very much goes to an individual level. Thank you very much. Very good luck getting to Heathrow. You're looking very much at an individual level, but are there always the circumstances where individuals can make these choices? You know, will they be able to save up their Nectar points by doing the community service? Are they in a position where they can necessarily?
I don't see clearly the sort of the Nectar point scheme works, and I'm not sort of saying that this is a one size fits all. And just the idea of big society reward points or something of the sort seems to be a sort of logical thing to try out. It will have a differential impact, I'm sure, in different types of community, and you have to kind of get the incentives right, or else the whole thing will become a terrible mess. But I suppose what I'm thinking about here is, and this is partly about the GP patient interface, is perhaps how GPs might start thinking to Jeff's point, quite rapidly about the ways of incentivising healthy behaviour. Because I think, you know, the discussion here is we all work on the assumption of the thing that I think we agree about, which is that if you can stop people falling in the river in the first place, then you don't have to fish them out a bit later. And the absolutely critical thing with public health is that if there is any massive re-engineering that can be done in the health system, the massive re-engineering is to stop people going into hospital in the first place, to stop people going to see their GPs even in the first place. And so, you know, the massive sort of price saver is going to be self-care, is going to be this sort of use of technology in the home. The technologies are out there for things like for people to do their own diabetes care at home. We just need to kind of we need to sort of jumpstart this a bit more as much as we possibly can, it seems to me.
I mean, Peter, you're not coming so much from the individual responsibility line, are you? You know, because you're talking about, if you think of the things that were done with smoking, these are more changes at a more societal level instead.
Yes, I mean, I think if you look at public health initiatives over the last 40 years, those that have been successful have combined certainly better education of individuals, but within a legislative framework. So whether it be cigarette smoking, whether it be related to safety belt use, undoubtedly legislation has had impact. In relation to obesity, my concern is unless there is a much firmer steer, nothing will happen. The rate will just increase. And remember, we're storing up problems because even if we stopped the increasing prevalence of obesity today in kids, we won't see benefit until 20 or 30 years, because it's 20 years down the line those children will get their heart disease, they'll get their problems from their obesity. So it needs to be a sustained campaign that goes beyond electoral term. With Paul Cosgrove, I can remember sharing with him an initiative in Tower Hamlets, which was part of a health action zone, in relation to a healthier food in the Ocean Estate, which is a very deprived estate, which was fabulously successful until the money ran out.
So if you could, because you've had all this, you know, experience of seeing all these different schemes come and go, if you were allowed to be the one person to design what we would do about obesity, could you really do something about it?
That's a real challenge.
You're pleased to know you're not the one person.
Fortunately. I mean, I think there are real opportunities now working much more closely at a local authority health. If we can break down those barriers, it's not health, it's across all the sectors of local society. And there are initiatives that have happened in other parts of the country which have been successful. Again, it's sustaining those. The separate element, I think, does mean, it goes back to a little bit what David Cameron, I took his quote, was that in the big society, I see a powerful role for government in helping to engineer this shift. It's really that nudge. And that does mean looking at the way we price foods, for example. If I'm a mum living in Tower Hamlets with five kids to feed, I will go for the cheapest food, which are the unhealthy food. If, on the other hand, we make those foods more expensive, but we use the revenue we raise to subsidise the more healthy foods, maybe there are opportunities from that. So it's looking at the combination of what we can do at a local level for relatively little resource and what we need to do at a more central governmental level.
So while we're on obesity, does anyone have any thoughts on any schemes they've seen that do work, or what they would do if you were charged with trying to sort out obesity? Is there any thoughts on that? Yeah. Can you wait for the mic? Can you wait for the mic, please? Could you stand up as well?
Sorry, we've talked about food, but we haven't talked so much about exercise, have we?
Good, I'm glad you asked that question.
And, you know, what else can we do to promote that? And I work in Stratford, and I was quite surprised at how poor at the moment facilities are for you know, accessing a gym.
Yes, well, actually, it's not just, it shouldn't be just focused on gyms, because it's just any form of physical activity. We were commenting on the way up here how the blue bikes, you would have thought they'd all be out in their thousands today because of the tube strike. And it's very striking they're not. So it's really, and I think we are changing. Again, it's focusing on kids. It's getting them to enjoy physical activity. It doesn't have to be athleticism. I mean, our previous Prime Minister, but one, Tony Blair, when he said, you know, we want all the kids to win the Olympics, it's not the right message. We want kids to enjoy physical activity. We want families, particularly in Stratford, to go out and enjoy physical activity. We need to promote that. And there have been successes in doing that, particularly related to activities at school and after school's activities as well. So, yeah, I don't want to keep focusing on food. It's a balance between physical activity as well as what we eat. It's a good point.
Simon, how important do you think obesity is going to carry on being one of the major issues for you?
Well, we are at this moment looking at obesity as one of those really big ticket public health issues, where actually many of the changes that we've talked about will facilitate the working, as Peter says, getting local boroughs with their they have some legislative powers at local level over food outlets, etc., getting them working also with the mayor, who has the ability and is using it already, of course, with his bike scheme, to command a broader sweep of public opinion about these sorts of things. We've used the 2012 date to set off our Go London programme, which, if you Google it, you'll get on the website, which has had a lot of take-up from various parts of London, using that what is research has shown, the festival effect, known as, of the Olympic Games, to raise people's expectations and excitement about physical activity, but very much, to take Peter's point, not concentrating on high-end athletics or lycra, but recognising that it's as appropriate for a group of Bengali women in Stratford to have a private session, which is one of the issues that had to be sorted. I think it was in Newham, actually, where I went and visited an exercise class for Muslim women that had to be blessed by the imam to allow them to use the space and to use it privately, because they were not going to go out to the local park and do aerobics in public. And they were not going to be doing their exercises in an environment that they did not feel comfortable for their own way that they lived. So I think what we're trying to do, I think, is to mobilise London to this issue. The Foresight Report came and went. At the time, it was, I thought, extremely well researched. There was some extremely good stuff in it, and I remember sitting down with my colleague, Regional Director of Public Health, and the Chief Medical Officer, looking at it and thinking what we could do immediately to make a difference. And it came down to the sorts of things that Peter's talked about, but they are complicated. And part of the reason why public health is such an intellectually stimulating thing is that it's not a straightforward thing. I don't want to take anything away from the achievements of our clinical colleagues when they are doing fantastic interventions to repair people's hearts or whatever, and the research that's gone into it. But public health is rarely something where a single intervention makes a difference. It's a multiple range of interventions that are both social, physical, and indeed psychological. And of course, the psychological is starting to get more interesting as people look at issues like nudge, look at social marketing and the techniques that are used in industry to move people's thinking towards different ways. So I hope that we can do this, and certainly I'll be on the phone to Peter to draw him into the work that we're doing to truly get us to the point. But I mean, what would people like? Will people respond, do you think, to, you know, a mayor standing up and saying, I want, you know, I want London to be to be the city that's leading the world in the reduction of obesity. You know, we have to get this absolutely right, because politicians don't stand up and say things like that unless they think that that's going to be a popular message. And I think the way in which we phrase this, all the things that Peter says we have learned from the alcohol debate, from the smoking debate, which, of course, if you remember, changed completely once we started talking about smoke-free rather than, you know, aiming at smokers. And this was not a ban on smoking, it was a smoke-free environment. Talking about collateral damage. Well, is there collateral damage, actually, around a member of your family who is, as a child, getting heavier and heavier and becoming unable to do things that they want to be able to do, and requiring care and treatment that they wouldn't otherwise require? Where's the collateral damage there? There probably is some in the family. And perhaps we hear some of that, which gets translated in terms of stigmatisation. But then when you talk to parents who have a child and they're struggling to keep their weight down, they're desperate to do something about it often. So, you know, I think we've got to all work together on this one.
Is part of the problem that healthy messages aren't, I mean, as you say, they're not fun, really, and they're not really going to be fun?
Well, anyone that does engage in physical activity knows that actually there are rewards from that. And, you know, perhaps people have been put off the notion of physical activity by too much of an emphasis on sport. I've played sport in my time, but I don't particularly want to sit and talk sport every evening, which I know some of my friends do. But I do want to remain physically active. So how do we reframe this in a way that says you don't have to be part of a five-a-side football team, you don't have to wear Lycra? I ride Boris's bikes, and I do it in order to regain the streets for people that ride bikes looking like my dad used to, with cycle clips on in a suit. Because you can do that with Boris's bikes. You don't need to, you know, to get changed into Lycra. You can cycle like this, and you'll see across London more and more people cycling in their work clothes. They're a bit slow. You don't get too hot and sweaty. But that's, you know, and if you go, people will know, if you go to many European countries, you know, little old ladies will come on a bike, they're dressed up to go out, they've got their gear on, and they've got their high-heeled shoes, and they're on a bike. So I, for particularly London streets, where I'm at my greatest risk from my fellow cyclists, I've decided, not the buses, but I have to say the camaraderie of the Boris bikes is beginning to grow, and we tend to now occupy the front spaces at the traffic lights to prevent the Lycra-clad delivery boys from mowing us down as they jump the lights.
And there's somebody with a question over here.
True physician, I just wanted to make one professional observation and then a personal observation from where I live. And I suppose the professional observation would echo an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine recently, which is just to say, as we move on to addressing obesity, which again, as a respiratory physician, I completely support, because in 20 years' time, it will be the most common cause of respiratory failure rather than smoking. We haven't finished the job on smoking, and still in a lot of our PCTs, 1 in 5 people die from smoking-related lung disease. And I think the figures are that 25% of our 16 to 19-year-olds, although I suspect personally it's higher than that, smoke. And they not only smoke cigarettes, but they smoke cannabis. And I think that's a very under-looked-at area where we're seeing far younger people coming through with severe COPD who've been cannabis smokers because of the damage. My personal observation was I have two teenage children who have been going through school in Tower Hamlets, and I just wonder if one of the groups who we don't have here, who we should have here, perhaps is a voice from the teachers, because I think one of the issues about increasing exercise and healthy behaviours in schools is that actually what the teachers in schools like Tower Hamlets are doing is really focusing on raising academic achievement, which they've done an absolutely outstanding job in, but I think if you asked them, they would probably feel that the health and the getting the kids into the playground wasn't their top priority. And I just wonder if we should be having dialogue with them, and I'd be interested in what the local authority member of the panel has to say about that.
Jeff. I'd be happy to join in that. So that whole conversation about obesity, you know, clearly a very wicked issue, and no one thing is going to be the answer to that. So what we need to do is to look at both the opportunity of campaigning, as Simon's saying, using the mayor's influence to have a sort of London-wide campaign. But in the end, the changes are going to happen on the ground, and we want to be able to pull levers together. In a small way, so in Hammersmith and Fulham, where we've had the joint children's commissioning team now between the council's side and the PCT side, it has meant that talking about the health of children has got onto the heads forum agenda, and I think those are the sort of little steps that we need to take locally. It's also the case, so we were talking earlier about the influence of work. Well, in that estate I was referring to, if 50% of the families are not in work, then they're not likely to be engaged in other things that are going to promote the activity of their children, the physical activity of children, and they're going to school and so on. So we need to be looking at how we can pull all those levers together, and I do think that there seems to be a greater willingness to think about how to do it together now than there perhaps has been in the past.
Somebody has a question here in the front row, and then at the end of the front row.
Okay, I'm Gail Findlay, I'm London Health Commission Coordinator. I think the last two points have touched on another sort of dimension of this discussion, and particularly pertinent to the big society sort of vision, and that is the whole issue of health inequalities and the Michael Marmot emphasis on the causes of the causes. You know, there's a lot of emphasis on individual behaviours, there's a lot of emphasis on legislation in terms of, you know, that would affect health behaviours. But when it comes down to health inequalities and a lot of the issues that have been discussed, obesity, smoking, long-term conditions, all still show a very serious inequalities gradient. So that's the missing link here, I think, is not to forget about health inequalities and those social determinants. So the teacher who is focusing on education, I would say keep focusing on education. That's going to do more for the health of your children in disadvantaged communities, I have to say, than even encourage them to go out and play in the playground.
Does anyone want to comment on that? Peter?
I mean, I completely agree. Actually, Tower Hamlets is a good example where education has very much gone up as a consequence of that focus on education. But on the other hand, there have been spin-off benefits from that. And the initiative, the healthy town is Tower Hamlets, and that was Change for Life and looking at physical activity as well as healthier eating. So I agree. It's we've heard, it's a very complex situation. It's going across all societal levels, and my real concern is that the health inequalities as we move forward in a very challenging financial environment will actually widen, not narrow.
I mean Gail knows my views on this. I think we've got to be careful that we don't get into a sort of it's either, you know, the social determinants of health that will make all the difference to this, or it's treating people as individuals who've got choices. I think that it's verging on the patronising to be saying to people that you are a subject of everything that is around you and you do not have free will. It's almost as patronising as denying that social determinants are a huge influence over the choices that people have to make. So I would like to see a very balanced and rich mix of all these things. So, yes, we are saying to the teachers, it is really important that these children have a good education, because we know that that gives them the greatest chance of moving forward in their lives and having control over their lives and taking the choices about their health that we'd like to. But I don't want the teacher to ignore the fact that the children that are in the class on that day are at risk from their obesity, just as much as they would be at risk if they came to school and they had bruises on them and that teacher was expected to take some action there. So I think there is a complete, if you like, balance to be struck between the two. If we're a society that cares about things that make a difference to people's health, we need to find every way we can to address it and not get into camps that are talking about one thing or the other. And I know you're not saying that, but it's important that we don't sort of express it in a way that turns one or other group of people off, because everyone's got something that they can contribute.
And we've just got time for one last question. There was somebody over here in the front. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm shouting into the microphone. I'm Peter. I'm a GP in Wandsworth. My comment really goes back to a much more sort of core level in all of this, because we're at an event where we're talking about innovation and we're all sharing amazing stories about different schemes and different services, and we talk about Nectar card schemes. It's all truly absolutely wonderful and quite spectacular, and the levels of engagement, I suspect, with different services is also very variable. Some people are hiking dustbins out of streams, some aren't, some are riding bikes, but maybe not. Is there, and it's a sort of a question, and it's also from personal experience, is there something about individuals changing their own approach to themselves, which is about that it's not a passive experience, and it's not something that there has to be an immediate result, but because of something else, somebody else acting on it. Something about that it is okay to think about your own management of your own state of affairs, whether it's your lifestyle, your social situation, or your health situation. And that there's something about core skills that, in reality, if we're honest, are not always there. So there's a set of wonderful bikes next to you, but for some reason you don't actually step onto it. That core set of skills that are there to say, I need to do something about myself, and one of my solutions might actually be that bike over there. And that this is also the case in our healthcare professionals and our social care professionals, that actually do they always have consistent skills to actually support self-care in individuals who are sitting in the room in front of them? Do they positively encourage it? Do they set the scene that actually setting a very simple agenda of thoughts or allowing a set of problems solving behaviour to occur in front of you, even before you've always opened your mouth and come up with all the solutions as a healthcare and social care professional? So I suppose it's a question, where do you see that there is a key role to actually step back a bit and say that while we do all these wonderful schemes, all these wonderful innovations, that actually we help to enhance those individuals to actually go out and grab them, because they see a purpose, they see the point.
Who's going to answer that? I think that plays into what I was saying earlier. I think that you know, there are examples, and it may be that my colleagues want to talk a bit more about nudge, but you know, we know, for instance, and we've known for years, that in smoking, and indeed in alcohol, but more in smoking, that the single phrase from a doctor saying, have you ever considered giving up smoking, is almost as powerful as anything else. And I think the many healthcare professionals do not recognise the power of the brief intervention, which is just one form of changing someone's attitude. So it helps them to think differently. It's not an instruction. It's simply a question which asks them. It's come from a respected person, and it asks them to think about their life, etc. I mean, it sounds as if my visit yesterday, but it was a rich visit out to Hammersmith and to White City. And there is an example of people from the community acting as health trainers who are known in the community, live in the community, understand the community, who are telling stories of exactly what you've described. So not a professional, telling someone how to do it, the nanny state, all that stuff. I hate the phrase. None of that. This was, you know, human beings who've been through it, who understand life, saying to another fellow human being, have you looked at your life, and is there something I can help you to change your life? And I think that sort of slightly compassionate way of thinking about it, which is that every human being, and here's big society, has some responsibility to help other human beings to lead a good life. Not patronising, not telling, not anything, just as a fellow human being. I think we could do much more of that than we do.
That is one of the schemes in Hammersmith and Fulham, and it is definitely part of the big society response. We need communities to be saying for themselves what they want from us as health and council professionals, as it were, and what the services that would better help them. but it links with that other point that we need all those other levers. We need people to be receptive to providing help that gets people into jobs, and we need to be, all of us, able to respond to each other on providing a sort of joined up response, rather than saying no, that's the GP's problem or that's the council's problem. It needs to be us trying to support things in the round.
Well, it's a good point for us to end on there. And thank you very much to our panel here, and very best of luck trying to get home, everybody, somehow. Thank you.